Tonight, two of us have watched the recently released Civil War. One of us hasn't. Tonight, we talk, we debate, we review, and should Sebastian watch it? Welcome to Mars on Life.
The most odd and stilted intro I have ever heard us do.
Glenn Beck, let's turn it down a notch.
I just kept thinking of either of you guys seen UHF with Weird Al Yankovic?
No, but no, it sounds like something that'd be up my alley.
Oh God, it's one of the most underrated comedies ever, but it's also just straight up one of the best comedies ever, where he basically gets his own TV channel, like his own cable access channel, and the programming is so bonkers and off the wall, and he even has his own like Jerry Springer equivalent, and he's got other shows and movies like Gandhi 2, Conan the Librarian. And then he's got a whole show that is hosted by the characters played by the guy that plays Kramer in Seinfeld, and he's obsessed with his mop, and he's a janitor. Long story. Fran Drescher's also in the movie. Overall, great stuff, and the intro to that was kind of an ode to Weird Al doing his Jerry Springer thing, where he gets hit in the head with a chair, his face is all bandaged up at one point. Good times.
I'll try to look cool sipping your alcohol. It's what gives your journalism any shred of credibility. Anyway.
Journalism? What's that? They should make a movie about why it's valuable.
Or make a movie about why it's dark and depraved and soulless.
Where would you two be without me? Just segueing hit after hit. Surprise, I haven't seen
a
movie
never
that you guys.
A segue, but
it's fun. It's like a hoverboard with a stick. So it's like you're riding a scooter, but you're riding a scooter horizontally, not vertically.
I remember back when they were the big thing at Disneyland, they had a whole exhibit where you could just ride them and then also talk to Asimov and then continue to ride these Segways. A bunch of kids did it in our band trip. I unfortunately did not get to, but alas.
Well, gentlemen, we are here to talk about the recently released movie, as I said earlier. It's a movie that we've been talking about for a while, and it was sort of inevitable that we were going to talk about it, just because A, we have talked about it, and B, I think the controversy surrounding the movie is tantamount to the kind of thing that we would normally talk about, and certainly the subject matter is right up various alleys of ours. Out of the three of us, raise your hand if you saw Civil War.
Ryan, they can't see us.
I know. We've been doing this lately, and I've been the one protesting, so guess what? It's my turn to go nuts.
No, I didn't see what could possibly be the biggest social gathering of the season. There. I've outed myself. All right, let's...
Didn't buy into the A24 Oscar bait?
Let's flog, tar, and feather me, and, nail me to the cross, why don't you? I don't know.
Well, if you want to get tarred and feathered, you got to come to Boston Harbor first, and then we'll talk about it.
Rather not. Ever since we disagreed on how we pronounce Worcestershire, however you pronounce it, sauce, I'm staying away from your turf.
Good lord. Anyway.
Anyway.
So, Civil War is out. As far as I know, at least according to most reviews, it's critically doing pretty well. I think at the box office it's doing fairly well. Let me just sort of double check.
I think last time I checked, it
Literally
had like
every
a
entertainment
seven.
journalism site is just like fapping over this movie loudly and messily.
Yeah, it seems very journalistic fodder, at least in the sensational space anyway. Of course, what I'm concerned about is if it's a good movie. And is it a good movie? I ask the two of you.
Ryan, I'll let you start because I think you were the one between us that was more enthused about watching this film,
Well,
this cinematic experience,
I frankly had low
this
expectations.
altruistic exploration.
I'll just quickly note that, yeah, there has been a lot of patting on the back from journalists about this movie. And it's weird too, because it's like it's film critics, it's people that news outlets think they have, these critics have a pulse on what's good, what's bad, you know, the state of things in the world, and especially in America as it relates to this subject. But and on top of that, I've heard a lot of reviews, including from reviewers that I trust and admire, that have lumped this movie into being, or at least saying that it should be in a similar category as the likes of All the President's Men, various other 70s journalism thrillers. I know Nightcrawler has been mentioned, and there definitely are comparisons, which I was genuinely surprised by, and also Spotlight, which focuses on the whole Catholic Church scandal and the Boston Globe looking into it. Again, I went into the movie with very low expectations, and I ended up walking out of it thinking, you know what? And mind you, I said this about The Flash, but I can guarantee you I'd probably watch The Flash like one more time and then never again. This movie is different, but it still lands in the same category as I know A24 and Max have their relationship where at some point down the line, A24 movies are going to show up on Max to stream. The moment Civil War shows up on Max, I will rewatch it. I actually thought this was a very good movie, very well-made movie. Like genuinely, like I did go into this thinking, oh, this is going to be highbrow to the point of being Oscar bait. And
Which it was.
instead,
I think it was definitely Oscar bait.
see, I'm not sure it's going to be nominated for anything. Not that it ultimately matters, but I don't feel like, I don't know. I don't feel like it's going to be nominated. I could be wrong. It could end up being nominated. But overall, I thought that the performances were very well done. I thought that the messaging that it was trying to get across, for one thing, I think a lot of journalists out there miss the point of this movie, and a lot of critics miss the point of this movie, where, and this is where it does lean into the, you know, and I'm gonna try and not mention Nightcrawler 1,000 times in this, but it does lean into that territory of, you know, when you are a reporter, like there's a lot of pluses, but also a lot of minuses when you're quote unquote objective. And in a movie like this, like it starts off very much like, oh, these are people that just want to record history. They want to be, you know, on the front, you know, journalism's always the first draft of history, as it's said. So, okay, they want to draft what is essentially going to be the end of the Civil War, or the beginning of the end of the Civil War, one or the other. It's very unclear. But by the end of it, it's very obvious that, you know, as professional as these journalists are, they're walking out of it knowing that their subtle allegiance, not to themselves, not with each other, but to one of the two sides fighting in said civil war, by the end of it, ultimately changes the state of things, but also shows that, you know, history, you know, I hate cliche. I genuinely do. But it ultimately goes to show that history is written by the victors. That's something that by the end of this movie you realize, okay, if journalism is the first draft of history, therefore the way that this war ends up, it's going to be written by the journalists that either, you could say chose a side, but they decided to be quote unquote objective long enough that they decided to bend. I don't know what's the best way to say it, but they decided to bend with the direction that the wind was blowing. Kirsten Dunst, she's like every other tough gal, foreign correspondent you've ever heard of. I could name a few, but I won't. What's his name? Wagner Mora is a hilarious, great character, but by the end of the movie, you start really thinking of him very differently, and start questioning his motives. And who's the young woman that you've mentioned now multiple times off
Ellie
air, Matt?
Spaney is just so I talked to her when I didn't actually meet up with her, but I've talked to her once when she was doing the press tour for Pacific Rim 2. I can't remember the subtitle of that one.
It's like
But I mean, I saw that movie
Uprising. I
and she
can't
was
believe I
fine.
remember that.
Okay.
I don't know.
But anyway, so she was, I think that was like her first real like big movie, and then now she's in this, and I'm just sitting in the theater, and as soon as I come out of the theater, I text the group chat, and my initial thoughts were, "Damn, I did not remember Kaylee Spaney to be that cute." That is my biggest takeaway from this movie.
Oh, God. Yeah, her
Also, though,
character.
like just in my opinion. Overall, it's like I thoroughly enjoyed like the suspense and the action scenes were very well done, like very much like worth the price of admission for this movie. I just think everything else was so obnoxiously heavy-handed. Like you couldn't find a heavier hand if you were like with Thanos in the Infinity Gauntlet. I just thought everything was just so much like, look at journalism. Look at journalism. Look at journalism. Oh, look, it's the Antifa massacre. Ooh. It's just, it's such, I think a lot of it was so pompous about itself.
So they were trying to portray journalists in a light that, like over glorified being the first one on the scene, or like drafting history, as Mancini
Essentially,
put
I
it.
felt like it.
Okay.
I understand that it's like, it definitely gave me the understand like, oh yeah, I could never be like a fucking war correspondent at all because it's like, nope, I'm not going to get my ass shot. Like I respect the people who do it, and I do think that this movie gives a good picture into what they do. I just think that pretty much all of the messaging that it has is just, to use the same phrase I've done, heavy fucking handed. It's not, there's no subtlety at all. And not that it needs subtlety, but it's just like after the first couple of times, it's like, we fucking get it, Alex Garland. Move on. I just want to get to the Jesse Plemons scene that everyone's been talking about. That's all I care about.
Well,
Like
I mean,
there's just so much of it, I think, that wants you to take it seriously. Like you could feel like they wanted, like at least for me, you could feel that they want the Oscar nom from this. Like it's gorgeously done, and like the performances are very good. Like Kirsten Dunst is just very like she's very dead-eyed and like bland, but not in the way that she like tends to be in some of her roles. Like this was very much intentional, like jaded. I've seen more shit than anyone could possibly think to see.
yeah.
And like all these performances are effective. It's just like, I feel that the material that they were given was very much reaching for sensationalizing what happened after January 6th.
Didn't I already predict that last time we talked about this? That they
It
were gonna
didn't do it
ride
as
on
badly as I
some.
thought it would. It very much like did its job and like in kind of making the different sides of the conflict vague. So you don't really know. I mean, there's a kind of an idea with like president taking third term and like California and Texas like breaking off from the US and then Florida being its own thing. Like you can kind of maybe glean what could have possibly happened and stuff. And like there, but there is no like explicit like this side good, this side bad. It's just this is how things shook out. And this is like kind of maybe what incited the conflict of these sides. And again, the Antifa massacre. which I mean could go either way, but there's
Yeah, it's very ambiguous.
it's ambiguous, but it's also like, oh, you saw January 6th and you ran with it, you motherfuckers.
Well, I'm seeing here that it was like people are interpreting it as you have California and Texas, two vastly different political ideologies coming together, like they're on the same side, and the common enemy is like authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And I mean, okay, it's cool that you've sort of established, a bit of a boogeyman, a bit of a common evil, because I think if you didn't and you just had the film be one side of the United States against the other, it would probably be more akin to, I don't know, the actual Civil War, which I thought that's what they were originally going for. It was a nation divided, not, a nation divided but unified enough for a concept that we all know is evil in terms of a power-hungry government. It's like, no shit, you look at that and you think, I'd rather live in a democracy than an authoritarian government. Is it wrong of me to have wished it would have been like more of a state versus state conflict movie rather than like Band of Brothers-esque?
Well, I think in a way,
It kind of seems like they phoned in the common evil.
well, I think that's where it's almost like you have to remember, and this is sort of where I disagree with Matt about sort of the January 6thification of this movie, where I think in a lot of ways, I think I mentioned one of the last times we talked about Civil War. There was some novel that came out, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, sometime with since Trump became president and now, called American War, about a second American Civil War. And when it came out, the reaction to it was that it was just a dull thud rather than the text of our time in terms of, America being so divided. That's because that book missed the point of, anything that people could grasp at, not to mention it was so manufactured, but also the author wasn't going off of anything that was tangible within American society. This movie is kind of like that, where it's not going off of anything and it really is leaning into the fact that this is ultimately science fiction. This is not supposed to show you, oh, well, there was the. I don't know, the Democrats created the bear republic, the whatever, the Grizzly Bear Republic of California, and they were able to team up with the Democrats in Texas who took over the state legislature at the Battle of San Antonio or like, and on top of that, it's not trying to give you, it's trying to show you a different kind of civil war than either A, what we're used to, and B, our first one. And in that respect, I enjoyed it because it made it seem like as though the United States, which I think in whatever capacity that there ever could be secession, which we've avoided secession. For Pete's sake, I live in the state that first threatened to secede. It wasn't South Carolina, it was Massachusetts. That's one of those history facts that we all forget about, but even I was reminded of it, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. And it was about slavery, funny enough. But in this movie, it does show it to you as, groups of clusters of states decided, all right, we're leaving, we're done. But then you've got, like, the more louder militaristic side of California and Texas, which California alone could be its own economy if it really wanted to be. It's one of the biggest economies in the world. So from that standpoint, it's like, okay, fine. But then you're wondering, okay, but whose side am I on here? Especially when, again, to Matt's point, you do have the president who is not going to step down and he's served 3 terms and he's cruel and he says lines that are very Trumpian. Many people have said, and it's like, where have we heard that before? You know.
Speaking of the president, I love how the marketing for this like really ham like brings up Nick Offerman, and then oh, he's there. Oh, he's gone. Oh, he's there. Oh, he's gone. Movie's over. What?
Yeah, he's barely in the movie. But honestly, you know what? In the tradition of those kinds of 80s and 70s movies that brought in, I mean, that's the thing. He's not a big enough actor, but he's a big enough personality that all you got to do is say he's the president of the United States, and already you have a sense that, okay, he's a big deal. So, but yeah, he, despite all the marketing, he is barely in the movie. I'm sorry, what was, I don't know if that helped at all with your question, Sebastian, or
No,
there was more
not
to,
at all.
okay.
I guess to answer your question with a question, this movie, generally asking, it's more, I'm assuming, focused on the horrors of war rather than the political dissonance of war.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, I would also go so far as to say that in having the antagonist be, this overreaching concept. I mean, it makes me think that they're sort of playing it safe because I can imagine you wouldn't want to offend certain groups of people wanting to watch this movie when it came out by immediately painting one side or the other as,
Yeah.
demonizing, even though even though, as artists taking risks often do, maybe it would have led to something more interesting. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a basis. I didn't see the movie, but it kind of it seems to me that it kind of pales in comparison over what could have happened if they would have taken a bold stance against, the past 5 to 8 years that we've lived through, and I don't know, maybe having some sort of artistic representation of that. And to Matt's point, the whole January 6 ism, there was nothing in the movie that like remarked that or anything like that.
No, this.
Nothing of reference or
No,
no.
but I think like you can't escape that comparison though.
Well, what do you mean by the comparison? I'm still confused
Like
by
the
that.
idea that one side of America would rise up in conflict with the other. And I don't know, it just maybe I'm being cynical and jaded, but
Hey, that's my job.
I just feel like maybe without the January 6th thing happening, either this movie might not have been made, or it might not have like have been such a big deal, and people wouldn't have paid attention to it so much. I mean, people are always like, especially the art house nuts, are going to pay attention to whatever A24 does,
Yeah.
which I will admit that A24 does put out good movies. They're not always good movies, but they are interesting films. So it would have had at least some fanfare. It does have like a fairly a cast with some members of it who have like decent followings. Like Nick Offerman has a strong following, but I don't think people would have paid nearly as much attention to it had it not been for the current political climate.
Yeah, that's fair. If you have something to peg it to, I can see Matt's point. If you have,
Like just knowing what happened on January 6th, you can't escape that it
well,
was.
if you have a political ideology and it doesn't matter what side you're on and it's so theatricized to holy hell, that is fun. It's both fun and funny to look at, demonize, bastardize, write hit pieces about. Fuck, political pundits make their living off of this shit, off of fear mongering
It's
and
true.
theatricality. Just before we got on this podcast, I was watching a documentary about how precious metal IRAs are mainly marketed towards conservative over 60s, which is hysterical because you'd think, yeah, that's about who you'd expect them to be marketed to. But then you look at who's peddling them. You look at the conservative news outlets, and it's like, if you have some sort of association with a certain historical event or certain anything that you think a demographic of people would like or would be interested in, which is, I guess, just advertising 101. Yeah, I could see it, you know. I could see Matt's point, and truthfully, if January 6 came and went, nothing happened. I don't know. I'm sure we would probably peg this movie's ideological stance to the fact that, hey, did you see who we had in office these last 4 years? Yeah, let's shine a light on that. Which, to be fair, it wouldn't be so bad if they would have done something more with it. Like, if you were to have Nick Offerman portray this Trumpian personality, which, correct me if I'm wrong, he did to a degree. Like,
I
he's the
mean,
bad guy, he's the authoritarian in the room.
he's like by the definition of, American presidents, like, yeah, he if he's taking on more power and he's
Okay.
assumed a third term and he's saying things like many people say, I mean, it already sounds very
Okay.
demagogic and dictatorial.
You could have that being the central focus, right? Like, it doesn't have to be this sort of, it doesn't have to have this like authoritarianistic, it's not a word, but, or is it? I don't know. I don't think you have
Authoritarian,
to
yeah.
authoritarian, you don't have to have this like blanket, oh, big brother-ism that's bad. It could be like, hey, let's pin it on this one guy that is already emblematic of someone who we all know existed who took office and take that story and run with it. Of course, I don't know what the laws are on libel and slander, but
Oh.
you know, I'm sure Trump already is pretty much underwater with his lawsuits as of late. So what's one more on top of it? I don't know. I think if they were to have Nick Offerman be the central focus of who we need to point at and realize that he's the problem we need to get rid of, that would have been cool. Unfortunately, my prediction of them having real life footage of the Capitol riot apparently didn't come to fruition. So, you know, sometimes you bet on black and you'll lose. I think that would have been a nice touch, you know, sort of
See,
serve as a cautionary tale at the end of the movie that this
so
happens in our backyard.
it's funny that you mentioned that whole sentence that you just said. That literally, I summed that up in a text that I sent to the Sundial guys,
Okay.
because after I had gotten out of the theater, which, by the way, I should point out, and I'll include the audio here, I ended up going with Taylor, and she definitely wasn't enthused. That was because I thought Andrew and I were going to see it, and then a bunch of plans changed, and so Taylor and I went, and you can hear her thoughts now. So we just walked out of Civil War. What did you think?
If I wanted to see a movie that had violence and fighting that's in the theater today, I would have probably rather gone to see Kung Fu Panda 4.
I'm
Overall,
assuming
though,
she
she
didn't like the
actually,
movie.
what?
I'm assuming she didn't like the movie.
She was like me, although her expectations were like even more below the ground. But she didn't hate it. Like, she ended up walking away thinking like, oh, that was actually not so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I went into this like expecting to hate it. I was open to the possibility of being surprised, and I definitely walked out of the movie not hating it. I thought, okay, this was definitely worth my money. Like, the tension was there, the production value was there. I hated how heavy-handed it was, but those battle scenes were fantastic, and Kaylee Spaney is really cute. I think it was worth my money and my time.
Well, I think as
Kaylee, if you
well,
ever listen to this, hi.
the overall sort of summary that I gave Pete and Kenny was that, and the reason why I named them is because the three of us saw BlacKkKlansman together years ago. And exactly what you said, Sebastian, they end the movie off. I remember Spike Lee did an interview with Anderson Cooper, and it was right before I went out and saw the movie. And Anderson Cooper just no shame. No shame at all. Just spoils the end of the movie and goes, "Oh, so BlacKkKlansman, it ends with Charlottesville. It ends with, the Nazis in the streets." And I'm sitting there, shaking my head, being like, "Bro, I got my ticket right here. Like, I'm about to go see it. What the hell?
But
Not
it's sort of it's
important,
it
but."
but it but it ties it together. I feel like with
Well,
BlacKkKlansman, you could know the ending scene,
it's.
and you can see how by watching the movie in its entirety, you can see how it's all cyclical, right? It's a cautionary tale. It's a
Well,
cautionary tale that happened, and you're showing how it's happening still,
but
right?
the issue though is that it's already based on a book that came out, I think, pre-Trump. I could be wrong. And as well, like it's so ham-fisted into the movie. Like the fact that you have the scene where Eric Foreman plays David Duke and he basically says, "Make America great again." And you're like, "Boink, I get that. I live in post-2017 America." And then by the end of the movie, when I had heard that the film ended with Charlottesville, I thought, "Oh, maybe he did like a reenactment or something and really saturated it to the point where you're thinking, this is how dark and disgusting those days in Charlottesville were." No, instead, he just uses a bunch of B-roll and CNN and MSNBC footage
Yeah,
and
he
then
shaved
show,
10
and it's all
bucks off the
grainy.
Yeah, he shaved 10 bucks off the filming budget by doing that. And that's what makes
Yeah.
it so poignant.
But it's ham-fisted. It's way too like I'm screaming from the rooftop. Do you get it? Do you get it? Whereas with this movie, I think
Well, did you
it's
get it?
Well, with this movie, I think it's being a lot more careful, and I don't think everybody is getting it. At least a lot of critics, some critics I follow were like, yeah, it does show the fact that, journalists that ultimately decide to go with one side after pretending to be neutral this whole time, yeah, sometimes that can be dangerous, but also it's showing that if you're willing to, potentially break the rules of war, but also act like, "Oh, it's okay. I'm an American. You don't need to shoot me." Like, sorry, don't be naive. Like, don't be silly. Like, there are journalists in that movie that act that way, and it ends up getting them shot. A la, well, I won't say it. Well, let's just say one scene in particular that has everybody on edge.
Is it the last scene? Or are you talking about the Jesse Plemons scene?
I wasn't gonna spoil it, but yeah, the Jesse Plemons scene,
Well,
that like
we're not. We
that's
can talk around it.
I mean,
Like,
I don't particularly care. I'm just wondering if being ham-fisted with this movie and hypothetically showing B-roll footage of, say, the Capitol riot would have driven this point home to people that really needed to understand the implications of what happened and what is still happening.
but see, I think the thing there is that people who went to see it, who were on the side of the rioters, would tell other rioters don't go see it, so it defeats the purpose.
Who fucking cares? I mean, if you buy a ticket and assuming you can make your own opinion about what's being
They can't.
shown. Oh, okay. Well, then, I may as well
Because
leave.
what would happen, Sebastian, is like you'd have a couple people on the MAGA side. I'm not even gonna sugarcoat that shit. You'd have a couple people on the MAGA side go and see it maybe opening night, then take to Truth Social and say, "Oh, don't go see this film. He's demonizing our Lord and Savior Trump. It's saying that we the bad guys for
See.
rioting in the Capitol. Don't go
See,
see the movie."
I would have been of the ilk of, I can imagine many people, MAGA or not, if they have even a militant bone in their body, would love it the movie for the aesthetic alone. And, assuming that they have a one-track mind would be like, that's the best thing since Top Gun Maverick. I served, like I can snap judgment, Now, gets more people in the theater, granted. However, if they're not thinking critically, and if it's missed that one thing that could really drive the point home, if a magnifying glass were to be used at the end of this movie, which would roughly translate into, look at how our nation is. Look at what certain people have done to it to make us more on edge. And look at the cautionary tale that is set in front of us as your Lord and Savior is now on trial, who, for all intents and purposes, could get off scot-free, or it's pennies in the bucket for him, and would in no way hurt his chances to run and possibly win again. No?
Even if
You
he's
don't
in
think he
prison,
could?
he could keep running, and then if he
No,
wins, guess
no,
what?
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He can run and win again.
Yeah. Okay,
Yeah.
okay.
So why not, as an artist, use your powers for good? Fuck the critics, fuck playing it safe, and make a film emblematic of the times we're living in. And I'm not saying that this movie, the movie that I didn't see, is sugarcoating anything,
Oh, it definitely doesn't. You see, there
but
are things in this movie that you're like, oh, and the scary, I'll say
yeah.
this. You see things in
Well,
this
hold on,
movie that,
hold on. I'm
okay.
not saying that they're playing it safe. However, if what I am hearing is true, that it's very much portrayed in a general sense and it doesn't really pinpoint who the bad guys are, rather than this obtuse, overarching idea of what's been bad in history for fucking hundreds and hundreds of years. Okay, I know that because I've read history, because I've went to school and I know what concepts demolish a nation, demolish nations, okay? From what I've heard, they played it safe in that regard, that they didn't have some sort of figure to pin it on, and thus, as long as we keep, it's like the whole combating socialism when you're like a diehard capitalist. Oh, socialism's bad. Okay, why? Well, it does this, 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 and this. Okay, but how does that stop people from thinking otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no representation of what it could mean to potentially live on the other side of that, right? And so with this movie, it to me, it more or less begs the question of like, what is it? What more does this film offer other than it's a concept that's bad, not the people that are peddling it, right? And if people are peddling it, how do we portray it as that's the bad guy, that's who we need to look out for, that's why history is the way it is, kind of thing, you know? I hope that made sense. I just
I think so. I mean,
yeah.
I will say that thinking back to comments that Alex Garland made about, oh, right versus left, like, people are allowed to have different opinions, blah, blah, blah. Well, you watch this movie, and I mean, again, going back to, and the whole plot point about the president, it's not anything, it's not any kind of spoiler. Like, that's already been out there. But I will say, that alone, by definition, is something that, I mean, let's face it, it's been a legit fear ever since people in power were like, okay, we let FDR be president for 3 terms and a quarter. We're not going to do that again. And since then, it's always been a constant fear whenever we have some president that is a little too heavy-handed with power and we start thinking, oh, is that person gonna get rid of that amendment and continue to be president for a third term? Which I have my theories in terms of, what could happen if Trump wins, but that alone is already something that should pin a president who's portrayed in a film as being not one of the better angels. That being said, that doesn't necessarily mean that the sides that you're quote unquote with in the movie are completely innocent either. And I think that's where, especially by the end of the movie, it does become clear that ultimately what this movie is trying to show you, besides the fact that, I've said it a million times, politics by definition is all about division. And it's all about who's got more power over the other half. But in a movie like this, not only is it showing you sort of the extreme of, whatever the extreme of America's divisions are, which are very nebulous in this movie, which again, I actually appreciate. I think fundamentally this movie is showing you that it's basically an anti-war movie. And the point I was going to say earlier is that the scene with Jesse Plemons, let's just say that you, by the time that I had seen this movie, within a few days in the head, within the headlines, there were reports of mass graves in the Middle East. So it's showing you things that are very real and, very topical, unfairly topical, and they shouldn't be topical. But I think that's also the point of the film, which is at its heart, I think it's an anti-war movie, the likes of which we've really not had for a long time. It's showing us how, okay, we already understand that the first Civil War was arguably that alone, that the American Civil War should have been the war to end all wars by itself. Forget World War I. War since then has obviously gotten far more bloody and horrible and just truly abhorrent in the decades, century plus since. But by setting it in the United States, it really hammers home, like, could you see yourself in a situation where, you're wearing your Hawaiian shirt, plus you're wearing Kevlar and you're all strapped up with your AR-15? And you're ready to shoot down your fellow American, and are you ready for that? And are you ready to bandage them up and have their blood pour out all over you? Like, this movie gives you so much. And even within the times that we live in now, it just goes to show the real gruesomeness of war in such a way that you're thinking to yourself, not only is this movie doing a good job at telling us America shouldn't go to war again with, or, with anybody or with itself. But also it just goes to show that, you're gonna have opportunists out there. And in this movie, the opportunists fundamentally are the journalists. Like, it goes to show you that, and this is where I think this goes back to my point of disagreeing with Matt about, how much it kind of props up journalists and, sort of shows them in this perfect light. In this movie, it really doesn't. It, up until a certain point, you realize, wait, the journalists in this movie are terrible. And like,
Wow, really?
not, and I, and here's the thing, professionally, because, to Matt's point, like, I mean, I could never really be a war correspondent, but I've been in situations like that where it's like, yeah, there's gunfire.
So
Yes.
professionally they nailed it, but tactfully they're just a steaming
Ethically,
pile. Oh, ethically.
they're
Okay.
bastards.
So
Like,
ethically they are all about their bottom line.
well, they're, yeah.
And they're no
Yeah.
different from those whose journalistic aspiration only goes so far as to see how many clicks they can garner. I'm of course using that logical fallacy of comparison. I know that that's not the same, but it's someone who's after their bottom line and thinks to themselves, well, if I can get away with doing this and peddling this Inquirer Examiner nonsense, then,
Oh, but
so
it's.
basically, it's I gotta get the scoop. That's the plot, or that's a big plot,
Well, that's.
yeah, I think so.
whatever the cost.
That's like the
Okay.
main plot, is that they gotta get this one scoop.
And here's the thing, getting the scoop, that's an ethically gray thing. That's something that, journalists, good and bad. I mean, for goodness sake, thinking I have a scoop or chasing something down, like, that's something I do on a regular basis. But in this movie, it's about how it's ultimately handled by the end of the film. Because let's just say that there's some role reversals that start to make you sympathize a little bit more with certain characters, and then out of the blue make you feel more sour to characters you've liked all along the journey. So by the end of the film, you're like, wait a second, these people
Yeah,
were
who do I pledge
scumbags all
allegiance to?
along.
Okay.
You know, and I will say too, the scene in Nightcrawler where Lou Bloom is filming his intern after he gets shot and then dies. Let's just say in a couple of scenes that is addressed in this movie. And the way that they do it is actually, I think, very, very tasteful, but also
I think
very
it was a
damning.
stupid moment. If I were for thinking about the same moment, there are ways that could have been gotten around where the individual is like, of you're standing there like nothing's happening. Of course you're gonna get shot. Like you're stupid and you deserve that death. And it for me also honestly, that moment felt unearned because it was just stupidity. It's just we need this character dead just to prove a point. So let's do it. It felt like that to me because like any logical person. You're not just going to stand there. You're going to move out of the way as soon as possible. At least if you're trying to preserve your own life, even if you are wearing a bulletproof vest, you're not just going to stand there where there is potential gunfire. I think it's stupid.
I think this particular scene,
Are we talking about the same scene, Ryan? Okay.
yes. All I'll say with this particular scene is that by this point, a certain character has had, and believe me, and this is one of my few critiques of the movie. I have very few critiques of this movie. I thought, is this like the greatest movie of all time? Of course not, but. For me, this walking out of this movie, like I've had enough time to think about it and gel with it, and for the most part, there's nothing about the movie that I found offensive or bad. It's not The Room, but I will say
The Room is
that
a perfect movie. Shut up.
I will
Yeah, I was
say
gonna say
that
it's perfect in every conceivable way.
oh my God. I will say
You know
though
how like
that.
Joseph Smith got the tablets from the earth, like when Moroni or whatever, like that was actually just the Room DVD case.
Oh, good Lord.
Two separate Room DVD cases encased in gold. Anyway.
Oh, but I will say that there are some story decisions that are very abrupt, and it's one of those things where you kind of have to catch up quickly to feel like, oh, that's what this person's going through right now. And then that's what leads to a certain character getting killed towards the end. And yes, is it very ham not hammy? Is it very
Stupid,
I wouldn't even go that far. Like, was it just
dumb.
like was it poorly done? To a degree, yeah. But ultimately, in the like this movie is very frenetically paced, and I think that in a lot of ways that is to its benefit because
Okay, let me ask you a question of comparison. If
yes.
Fallout can do it with its dry topical humor that it's been known for having, compared to this movie, which media did it better? Was this movie trying to capture like dry topicalness of impending doom and war surrounding them, or were they actually chumming it up for the camera in an attempt for, you know, to take the story seriously and for the, and probably what's more important, for the audience to take the story seriously? This work of fiction, everybody, let's not forget, were they playing it up for the camera in an attempt to be funny but also drive home a message, or were they, or was every choice a concise effort to be a cautionary tale?
So I still have not watched episode one of
Okay,
Fallout, so I can't
fair
say.
enough. All right, I, from
But
the
to that
yeah.
point, I watched Fallout just because I liked the video game. I didn't care about the politics. I just wanted to see a Deathclaw, and I was disappointed.
All right. Well,
Ah.
I think because it's really the only thing that I've been watching lately, and the reason why I'm comparing it to Civil War is because you do have parallels in terms of, you know, faction allegiance And you know, I we've all heard, even if you haven't seen the show, we've all heard the quote of, you know, everybody wants to save the world, they just disagree on how, kind of thing. Which, I'll be honest, when I first heard that quote, it's pretty powerful. I think it's pretty poignant. Now that I've heard it over and over and over, it kind of drives home the point. Oh, okay. So even in our darkest days, a nation united can't fucking unite when it really counts. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I saw the map of like factions that this movie represented. There's like four.
Yeah, there's like four. Well,
So we
there's
have like the Brotherhood of
two.
Steel here. We have the NCR here. We have like.
Well, there's two, and then there's the California Texas Republic,
Yeah,
which is
or the
basically just
WF,
California and
right?
Texas. So,
The Western Forces, the WF.
oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I think to that
Anyway,
point,
yeah.
and I know we were talking about it earlier about like, well, what if this movie did lean in and take the artistic leap to basically point a finger? And I think ultimately, and that's the kind of thing that Black Klansman did. And frankly, that's something that I'm, in all honesty, just tired of with fiction, especially current fiction right now, especially with TV and film. And even to the point about, well, they could have spun it off of something real. And, I always go back to the same two novels that came out. Well, both of them were recommended as like, oh, these are the books that predicted Trump. One is entirely fiction and follows a failed Roosevelt administration. The other one is using real historical figures, also following a failed Roosevelt administration. FDR, I should clarify. But I feel like both books give you a sense of terror, but the book that's almost entirely fictional, there's something about it that makes it feel almost more terrifying just because. Basically, the main reason why that one feels more terrifying is simply because of the fact that it does lean into the patriotism of America of that time, of Depression America, but also it leans into the possibility of what American fascism could be like coming from somebody that was alive during that era. Whereas this other book I'm referring, that book being It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, highly recommend. The other book being The Plot Against America by Philip Roth, also recommend. I honestly, with this movie, it's hard to spin it off of anything real just because, there is no reference to anything besides the Antifa massacre, whatever that was or is in this film's universe. There's no reference to a real president other than the portraits of the presidents in the White House, which, yes, I was that nerd in the theater who looked up and said, "There in the White House, that is a portrait of James Garfield."
Yeah, sky blue. All right.
Which they kind of did something like that in the Family Guy episode where Peter works for Donald Trump. I saw that one recently too. Funny stuff. Anyway, I honestly think you can still get away with a movie like this and have it feel, again, like that kind of 70s disaster science fiction movie where it doesn't need to rely on the real world. It doesn't need to rely on the comedy, quote unquote, of its time. On the other side of the equation with, picking a certain side, I think Alex Garland did a poor job of explaining this, but I will say that if you want to just take the broad scope of history, I could talk about the times we're in now, but I won't. Just because it is very hot, very much a hot button issue, and there's a lot said about it. But I will say that this movie does go out of its way to basically give you that kind of, I don't know, fogginess as to, well, okay, hang on. Nick Offerman's character, is he one side or is he the other side? Meaning, is he a Republican or a Democrat? And ultimately, you don't know. The movie doesn't tell you. And there's nothing about the politics of this universe to give you an idea of, like, well, are the Democrats running this? Or are the Republicans running that? And I think the movie does a good job at not talking about it because, quite frankly, you can get pure evil from both parties. You know, as much, you know, I'll leave it to Donald Trump to say, very fine people on both sides. Well, I'll be the one to say you can get very evil people on both sides. So, case in point, Lyndon Johnson. The guy could have gone down in history as the second coming of Franklin Roosevelt and instead butchered a whole country and butchered a bunch of Americans by feeding them to the fire with Vietnam. And ultimately had to be like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna do this. I wanted to be president since the moment I got out of my mama, but guess what? I screwed up. So I don't want to be president anymore. You know. So I think this movie did a good job at basically saying we could have this with any president, and especially any president who decides to claim more power, which at this rate, regardless of the fact that it was a Republican that decided, you know, hey, I'm gonna let my supporters rampage the Capitol and try and, you know, save the election for me. He's now opened the door so that that could happen from any party going forward. And obviously we're a two-party country, but every time a president does something wrong or does something horrible, they set a precedent that makes it okay for a future president to do a worse version of that. So ultimately, I look at this movie and the sort of apolitical side to it and think, you know what? As a cautionary tale, as an anti-war movie, it checks every box. Again, it is well made. You know, a lot of the other actors portrayed in the film, you know, I don't know the actor's name, but he was in the first Dune movie. He played Thufir Hawat. He's like this old school journalist guy that's like, ah, I'm too old. I can't run with you guys. Like, he's entertaining. You know, there is some quality to the film that makes you think of like old, and when I say old, I mean like movies from the 90s about the Civil War where they're going through like Appalachia or whatever. Because they're basically going from New York to Washington, D.C. And all the while, Western forces are like penetrating through, and it's going to get to the point where they're going to capture the Capitol, which also is no spoiler. It's in the trailers. So, yeah, I mean, and yeah, does it have that apocalyptic road trip feel that you get when you watch something like Logan? Hell yeah. But I don't know. It adds to it, and it also goes to show you that, you know, let's just say that there's one particular moment with Kirsten Dunst and is it Kaylee Spaney, where you can watch the scene and there's the ethical issues of it in terms of they're with a certain individual who's got other individuals imprisoned. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, anybody with a brain would think to themselves, I need to get rid of this guy's gun and save these other two people. But then you're thinking to yourself, hang on, this is an American Civil War. And then the question becomes, there's the matter of loyalty, but then there's also the matter of do these journalists just not want to get shot? Which fundamentally, they just
There's
don't want to get
also a
shot.
question of like not interfering with things as the casual outside objective observer. Just in I guess journalism, especially in photojournalism, like National Geographic folks who like photograph these horrific things but really can't and shouldn't do anything to stop them. One, because that would be compromising like the objectiveness, but also like their own safety and things. But it's funny with just looking at the ethics of journalism and like the dangers present to journalists. Like I say, oh, I stick to entertainment journalism because it's safer. Meanwhile, I think I can't remember the organization. It might have been Nylon or someone who like did not publish the reviewer's name on the review of Tortured Poets Society, because allegedly last time that they published a review of a Taylor Swift album, that journalist was getting death threats for not liking every single track on the album. So
Yeah,
they
sane
instead of
people.
so they put
And
Nylon staff or
sane
something.
and sane propagators
Right.
of content that should be
So, yeah.
protected by free speech anyway. It's
But
not
it's like
to
it's
say that,
weird.
well, I
It's weird
wonder
how
if
like journalism has become sometimes like something so innocent as just like a review. It's like, okay, maybe it wasn't to my taste. And like the thing with reviews is when you're looking at reviewers, you pick someone who has the same taste as you and you go on that. That's ideally how it works. Like you don't like
Yeah.
look at every review on every site, or you can like aggregate and see the general concept, but like you can't expect every reviewer to have the same opinion. Like
Yeah,
you'd
but
find a reviewer who like.
I wonder if some journalists think that, like, oh, the juice isn't worth the squeeze kind of thing. And
God, I
it's
hate that
like,
phrase so fucking much.
okay, yeah, but I'm
It's
sorry,
so weird.
but if you're not willing to go outside your comfort zone, and
Right.
I'm not saying getting death threats is okay. And that would probably speak more so on the mental capacity of whoever's sending those death threats. But, as a journalist, I'm not. As a journalist, both of you, I need to ask, do you feel like both of you should have unfettered access to the things that you are reviewing and commenting on in order to drive home a perspective that you believe other people should have this perspective on and take an unbiased approach to get news to the public that wouldn't otherwise consider viewing it? Yes or no?
Well, is this through an independent
The
means, like the way we're
sure,
doing it here, or like with my job?
an independent means, if you feel like it should be done through gainful
Look,
employment,
the
like,
way I am approaching this question
yeah.
is I did a review of The Last Omen or The First Omen a couple weeks ago. I hated
Okay.
it. I think it was a shit movie. I think they just recycled everything that they did in the actual previous Omen movies and just mushed it together. It was really boring because of that. Like there was obvious like artistic merit in the way that they crafted the scenes. The actors were good, but as a story, it was boring, and I gave it a 3 out of 10. Now I write the review, I write the headline, I send it to my editors for Geeks of Color, and then the editor Dorian's like, "Yo, you did not have to go this hard on that headline. Like Disney's gonna be so mad at us." And it's
Who
like, I don't want you
cares?
to have to like. I don't ever want you to have to censor your opinion, but realize that as a smaller publication, like if we make Disney mad enough times and like negatively review their stuff enough times, they'll stop giving us access to things.
Okay, so
That's how
you are
I see it.
at
I think that
the
we should have unfettered access and regardless of what our review says, but as an industry, of course Disney's not going to want to send things to people who don't like their content.
Yeah, but that's stupid because if
It
people
is.
don't
It's
like
ridiculous.
their
It's not a good
content,
movie.
if
It's a
people don't
shitty
like their
movie.
content, Disney and other media conglomerates should have the wherewithal to adapt and overcome as a corporation and make something that people would like.
But that's the thing, when all these corporations have like these powerhouse like IP generating machines and they have these powerhouse lawyers, like anything that they perceive as a threat, they kind of just throw to the side and hush up or prevent from happening. So that's my take on that.
I don't think you can have both. I don't think you can give someone unlimited internet access to share their opinions, but then secretly hope that you have the means to silence those that disagree with your corporate opinion. I'm
I tell
sorry.
that to Disney and Nintendo.
Okay, but the thing is that if you, well, in Nintendo's case, I would probably argue more so along the lines of, if the main point of contention with a company like Nintendo is, for instance, someone pirating their games, pirating 30 to 40 year old games that people have owned previously, I would go so far as to say secondhand, these people have owned these games again and again and again. And these are IPs that Nintendo has no interest in re-releasing. Otherwise, If I get my Nintendo Switch membership and I don't see those ROMs on those emulators, I'm assuming Nintendo doesn't give a fuck anymore, which is why you have these websites that house these ROMs, and I guess out of fear of litigation, I won't say them. But it begs the question as to, obviously, this is allowed to a degree, right? And I think until we as a species stop worrying about where that line in the sand is drawn, because it's been accessible to us to engage in this content and to have an opinion about said content, we're never going to get anywhere. Now, I realize that it'll take a massive shift, either it be, I don't know, Disney's stock tanking to zero, or people suddenly realizing that they can no longer afford or want Nintendo products anymore. But I would assume, not to say that corporations are people, but if they want to adapt like people and have these fucking conversations, you would assume that corporations would think, oh, well, that movie went up like a fart in church. Maybe don't do that movie anymore. Hey guys, that one scene in Lightyear was such a deal breaker. I don't know. Again, I'm
Speaking
not
of
a
which,
writer.
Lightmare was in the trivia I went to yesterday as one of the
Oh, cool.
worst pr reviewed Pixar movies of all time.
I'm just saying, I don't think either of you, as journalists, in a perfect world, should worry about the opinions that you guys are proclaiming to the world, because I think you two have an obligation to deliver those opinions to the world. I'm
It's
not
a
saying that you
double-edged
should.
sword. Sharing your opinion can make you enemies in the corporations, and they
Yeah,
don't want to
right. And
share things.
that's
But
where
it's also
the.
necessary because it's a check on like what they're doing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
but it
mean.
shouldn't work the other way, where a corporation has this unlimited stream of resources and funding, where what, it's going to spend its day bashing the little guy? Like, that just seems so.
Welcome to late stage
I
capitalism. I mean,
I
that's.
I get it, but if you're going to censor if you're going to censor naughty opinions, can you at least not be so cringe about it? What are they going to use, the ban hammer? Oh, they didn't like our latest Disney jaunt. Let's fucking eradicate them, send them to the electric chair.
Well, and I think going back to the movie, like that's where it's not so much that these are journalists that are expressing an opinion, but it's also
No, they want a scoop, right? They just want to cover it.
well, they want a scoop, but also it goes to the ethics of like how do you get to that point? And I think it boils down to, and obviously this goes to the murkiness of journalistic integrity and sidesism. I think there's a lot of flaws with that, quite frankly. I've made that clear before. I think it's one of these things where, and this goes back to a point Matt made. One of the first times I think we ever talked about Civil War before we even saw it, which is, to just straight up say, oh, well, there's issues with both sides, but ultimately, like, Americans have to come together. There are legitimate bad actors out there that you cannot side with, and you cannot push objectivity aside, or not push it aside, but rather, you can't push your opinion aside for the sake of objectivity to say, I need to be on this person's side so that therefore I can get the story out in X, Y, and Z. And with this movie, I will say that what it does differently, especially when compared to at least what I do know of the first Civil War, I almost called it the original. The first Civil War is that for the most part, I mean, obviously, technologically, very different time period, but those photographers, for the most part, were either working for the government or they were very clearly on the side of the Union or the Confederacy. For the most part, they were on the side of the Union. A lot of the photos that we do see of the Civil War come from, quote unquote, our side. But if you're trying to, talk about the objectivity of journalism and how there's that bloodthirsty side of it, Then the movie did a good job. It's a bloodthirsty side that I don't agree with, though. You know, I on one hand, I can understand going out needing to cover something that could put my life in danger, and I have done that. But at the same time, I don't want to do it for the sake of exploiting other people. And in this movie, they show you both of that. They show you both of those things, and they show you how just idiotic the objectivity can be. So.
To your point earlier, I guess bringing this up again about like the ethics of journalism, Ryan. I was watching a not watching. I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and it was about the longest heist or hostage situation in like Brazil's history, and how journalism played a part in, surprise, surprise, the girl probably getting shot and killed in the end. And what part of what happened was. Is like they were going through all this police negotiation. Like the police negotiators were talking to the hostage taker, and then the like certain journalists in Brazil got a hold of that hostage taker's number and started calling him and talking to him and like just calling him to get like scoops and like exclusive stuff to, of course, drive views to their websites and to get their own fame and to boost their ratings. And it was alleged in later the allegations later by the police is to part like the police also had their own culpability here, but one of their reasons why they're saying that they're not at fault is because they were claiming that the hostage taker was prepared to give himself up and not shoot anybody and was in negotiations until the journalists started talking to him and, as you were mentioning earlier, said like desperate to get that scoop, that initial like I'm first, I have the exclusive story. They were so desperate to do that that they got this hostage taker to really enjoy that media attention. And so when he felt like he was stopped, like the eyes were starting to shift away from him, he'd do something desperate. Like he decided he didn't want to give himself up because he liked people paying attention to him, things like that. So there is the question of like, where is the ethics in journalism like supposed to be? Like people wanted this story, they wanted to hear his side of things, but they also spun this whole story that he was like this star-crossed lover, this desperate poor puppy in love when he was just a psychopath 22-year-old with a gun who wanted to shoot a 12-year-old girl who didn't want to like be with him in a relationship. Again, 22 and 12. This girl was 12 when in this relationship. But there's the and then the journalists are saying, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. I was just doing my job. I just called him. I got the information. I got a story. Like I would do the same thing over again. Where is the culpability in journalists in journalism? And like where does and this is a question that I struggle with all the time. Like, and I think we've both struggled with this working for the Signal, Ryan, but where does the push to be the first to publish stop? I hate that push so much.
I asked this question to all three of you when Drew, I don't remember what episode it was, but the four of us were on. And I believe I asked the same question, or I think I asked my personal spin on it, which was, what is garnered by being first, the first to cover a story? And Drew gave me just sort of an answer of, clicks, views, engagement, and I
People
guess,
also will see you as the expert
right. Well,
in the room.
I guess the 15 minutes of fame garnered from it, which I can understand when you have news outlets specifically inclined to host a service that provides like live updates, and there are multiple contributors to it, which I think personally does a much better job at showing multiple perspectives of the same issue, which you would envision would work in this case. It doesn't, i.e., it doesn't matter who covers the issue so long as it's covered and it's continually covered, just in case we may have missed it. I don't remember what service does it. I think it's called like Ground News or something, which has like a journalistic quote unquote blind spot where it'll cover a story, it'll show you how the story is being covered from both the left and the right and
Oh,
the
yeah.
center. And it'll also show you, hey, here's what you may have missed in, in like contextual or subtextual sort of, articles. So much how I would ask the same question to an addict, it doesn't matter what they're addicted to. When you inevitably get that high from being first on the scene and being the first one to cover it, why do you go and do it again? Like, why do you feel like you have to be the first on everything? At that point, it becomes more of an addiction and less of a journalistic obligation. It's certainly not garnered with integrity if all you're doing is looking for that, I don't want to say validation. I don't want to think of it as like you're posting on Facebook and you want people to like it. But I will say, as we've evolved and implemented the internet in how we receive our news, it's kind of what it's morphed into. If
Well,
you're feeling this rush from the first article to the thousandth, I think you've kind of already dug yourself a hole in terms of what you find most important in terms of being a journalist. I would go so far as to say that war correspondents, yeah, they probably garner hazard pay because it is a hazard to do their job, whereas people in the entertainment journalism area, they're covering media opinions, and I don't want to say it's the same element of danger, but if you're receiving death threats, I'd go so far as to say, well, that's not ideal either.
it's two different worlds,
It's two
but
different worlds, but yeah.
I will say, from the standpoint of like, well, ultimately, what does it get you to be first to the story? And
Yeah, what does it get you? Does it get you 72 virgins? Does it get you?
only 71.
Oh, God. Does it, does it? Am I going to be first in line at the pearly gates? Am I going to get a gas card for a year? Is Ralph's going to allow me to just ransack the store? Like, what is the. Because I know I've joked about this in the past about how, like, you've made it as a journalist if the CIA wants you dead, kind of thing. And for a long time, I've wondered if that's sort of what the goal of being a journalist is. Not to like tip off a government agency and die, but more so to blow the lid off of something that really needed the lid to be blown off of. Like, it doesn't matter if you were first, so long as you made that lasting impact,
It's a
right?
business, though. You're driving people to go to your site. Like, if you're not first, if you're just reposting or being late to certain stories, people are just going to go to the places that have the news first readily available, and because then what's the point of reading your site? Like, I as much as I hate the push to be first, like, unless you're bringing, like, you could be late to a story, but you can also bring something new to it, like a new angle, a new quote, a new discovery, like for stories that are continually developing. Like, I bring this up because it's back in the news again, because fucking Weinstein's getting his conviction overturned. But like, during the Weinstein thing, like, everyone was talking to the people that he'd worked with because they each had their different experiences with him. So every single time you talk to someone who had worked with him, you're going to ask them that question. You're going to tie it to the whole Weinstein thing because it's what people care about. And like, you got that quote first, and you're going to do your damnest to drive the attention to that topic while it's still relevant. And you're going to
I
get
don't
those
know.
quotes, get that advertising revenue, and yeah.
I really don't think it should matter. If I'm seeing that Weinstein, for example, was, has his conviction overturned, if I'm reading that 70 different times on 70 different articles, I'm going to think to myself, oh, his ruling was overturned. Yeah, I needed all that. I really did. Now, it was a matter of I found out something different, something that perhaps hasn't been covered. Okay, then you're expanding on the story. That's what we're need. That's what we need in terms of, how this is live updating. CNN does this great with the Israel conflict going on right now, where it's multiple contributors. But I don't need 70 different hyperlinks for 70 different websites. So I guess when does the race to be first slowly devolve into the realization that being first is pretty oversaturated as an
Well,
industry?
it's, I mean, Matt basically said everything I was going to say. If anything, if I have anything to add to that, and to also answer your question, Sebastian, just now, it's that for the number of times that you keep being first, it does just put you up into that category where, number one, it puts the pressure on you to always be first, but also it puts the pressure on, well, it puts less of a pressure on you where if, like, say you're NBC and CNN ends up being first to something, or BBC or Reuters or whoever. Basically, it's like, you know what? Ultimately, you have competition. I leave it to the, you know, editors and business people out there to consider whether or not that's friendly competition. But
It's not. There's no good sportsmanship in this industry.
I
I'm
mean,
sorry.
well, here's the thing. I'll put it to you this way. In
Unless it's
what?
strictly collaborative, which ideally would work. And
No,
it
I mean, Sebastian, there's a reason why we don't trust BuzzFeed News. Well, to that point,
They had their one story. They had the golden shower story, and like people still didn't really
Yeah.
take them seriously after that.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I guess if you
because that's
shoot
the only
yourself in the
story that they really ever broke.
If you shoot yourself in the foot, you're gonna have that reputation,
Yes. But
which,
it's like
yeah.
when you're a news agency that constantly is breaking legitimate stories and doing it first, then people start to take you seriously.
Right. To my point, what I was gonna say was that, you know, you can have like for example, I once worked for a news outlet where I was trying to source a different news outlet and their reporting, and the outlet that I worked for basically said no. They are competition. You absolutely cannot refer to them. And I'm like, okay, they are one of the big three, or at least they previously used to be one of the big three news channels. Not cable channels, but just one of the big three channels. ABC. The paper I was working for was smaller than the paper I worked for with Matt, and it wasn't the Proclaimer. So I'm like, how the hell is this competition? Meanwhile, where I work now, we do aggregate. And that's no secret. You can just read our own reporting, and we do sometimes have to aggregate from other news outlets. And as one former editor of mine told me, sometimes it's not only to recognize the fact that, you know, we have to get our information quickly, and sometimes we can't always get our information quickly. It's also the fact that, like, sometimes we can recognize other outlets' good journalism whenever we want. So it's. It depends on who you're with. It depends on who you work for. Ultimately, though, it is about reputation. It is the business side of things. The whole goal of being first. In terms of Civil War, you know what? It made for interesting storytelling, at least. And by the end of the movie, you're like, oh, so this was the cost of being first. And you know what? It was interesting. And by the time the credits roll, it gives you a very stinging feeling of what winning a civil war could mean. So ultimately, you know what? Go see this movie. Have a good time. Is it dark? Yes. Do you see some disturbing material? Absolutely. Is it a great anti-war movie? You know what? We haven't had a good anti-war movie in a while, at least a good one. So go check it out. Sebastian, I'm sure you'll probably watch it at some point, but I think it's ultimately well worth it. Don't take any guff from the people that are like, oh, the journalists. Oh, it's all for them. I just wave those people off. I'm just like, ugh!
Don't stand in any hallways. Duck, goddammit.
Yeah, duck. Or wear more armor.
Duck? Wait, you said duck?
Goose.
Goose! Goose!
Oh, jeez. Next week, TikTok.
Ryan, you should have ended it just right there.
That was it. Did you get that?
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez.
If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erbrick. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.